This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
My mom went to Sultan Ibrahim Teachers Training College in Johor Bahru, and it was here that she first met my dad, who was also in the college. Although she had a few Chinese guys who admired her, she used to tell them that she was already interested in my dad, an Indian man. Eventually, they were paired up in a college function, and as they say, the rest is history. I was born in...
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Kevin Bathman is a Malaysian-born curator, storyteller, and social change advocate who has been based in Australia, and he's perhaps best known as the founder of the Chindian Diaries, a project that combines visual and oral history to document cross-cultural stories between the Chinese and Indian communities. The excerpt you heard earlier is from this project, and you'll be hearing more throughout the show. The Chindian Diaries has since spun off into various forms, including exhibitions and performances. Kevin is here with me today to talk about this project and how the arts and social change can intersect. Hi, Kevin. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Sharmila.
So maybe we can start things off. You know, you do so many things. What is it that you actually do?
It's a difficult thing to, I guess, respond to because I do dabble with quite a lot of things in Australia. So firstly, I guess I also work as a producer in a not-for-profit organization called Diversity Arts, and where, you know, I sort of manage projects and also organize events. And then on the flip side, I also apply for my own grants and do my own projects as a sort of independent curator, arts-based person. And then on the sort of the day-to-day, I guess, work front, I also work as a creative consultant for a health agency that does communications projects for multicultural communities there.
So a lot of the work that you do revolves around this idea of arts and culture as well as social justice, social change, right?
Yes, correct.
And what are some of the recent projects that you've done that intersect these areas?
There's been quite a few. I've been sort of dabbling in this space for about 6 years or so. So I in 2013, I started off this initiative, I suppose, and I called it Carnival of Bold, where we engage with, I guess, diverse artists who are sort of tackling social issues via their art. And so what we did was over the past 5 to 6 years, we've invited artists to share their stories. So in a sort of a digestible way for the artists or for the community, really, to understand social-based issues in a much more digestible manner.
And I suppose the thing that brought you to better renown here in Malaysia was when you started the Chindian Diaries back in, it's been in 2012. And I think you've amassed something like more than 25,000 followers on Facebook since. Did you ever think that this would happen?
Not at all. So I guess in 2012, when I first started it, it was really from a workshop that I did to sort of explore my own ancestry. And back then, you know, I didn't think very much about my own cultural heritage, you know. And so by delving into it and trying to figure out, you know, firstly about the stories of my own grandparents, which was largely based around that, I then realized that I kind of wanted to share this journey, you know, with others who probably would resonate with this. And I suppose it sort of became a passion project in many ways because I kind of wanted to share my research with everyone, you know, and I thought, well, the perfect way would be through Facebook, you know. So it became a very sort of an online sort of project where I was accumulating stories and photographs of people from those two diverse communities. And I realized that, you know, people like myself or people who were from mixed background have not had much of a prominence or no one has actually... I guess, shared their story, you know, to a mainstream audience in Malaysia. So it was through that, you know, that I kind of wanted to really kind of like just sort of to use that intersections and to really get people to sort of read those stories and also see those photos because the response I usually get is that, you know, they've not heard of like Chindians? You know, I mean, particularly I'm talking about the Australian audience. In Malaysia, of course, you know, it's such a colloquial term that everyone knows, what a Chindian is, you know. And I guess it's great to see that, you know, it's now become sort of a mainstream word and everyone knows about that, you know. And it gives visibility to a community that has really rarely been talked about or written about, you know.
I think one of the things, though, that came out from your project is that, as you said rightfully, in Malaysia, we're familiar with the term Chindian. But it was quite obvious from the stories that we don't actually know as much about these wonderful mixed families as we really should. Tell me a little bit about your own ancestry.
Sure. So I guess I was kind of looking at sort of the intertwining of cultures, religion and families. And it sort of came about with looking at the stories of my own grandparents from my paternal side. So my grandfather is from South India, Thanjavur, who met my Chinese grandmother and they used to live in Brickfields in KL. And so when they got together, I mean, there was this huge uproar in the community, and my grandmother was eventually disowned. I mean, her Chinese side used to call my grandfather Hakwai, which meant black devil. Mm. So my father never actually ended up knowing his Chinese side at all because they were completely disowned. I don't think he's even met them even before, you know. So they sort of grew up with a very it's a bit of an Indian background, you know, but having a Chinese mother. Who had to really adopt a new culture altogether, you know. So she had even an Indian name. She was called Jaya, so Jaya Ang. And she had to learn how to cook curries and, you know, and even in the 1930s, this is 1930s and 40s, she had to learn Tamil language. So she could actually speak Hokkien and she could also speak Tamil very, very fluently. So it was a very interesting period, I think, and back then, you know. And of course, now, you know, it's a thing that people kind of go, oh, you know, people are used to it now, you know. Mm. But I suppose if you really look back in history, I mean, there were all these gems of stories that I really wanted to sort of uncover, and to hear the stories that we never really hear about, you know. And that was really sort of the premise of the project, really, and looking at stories of the Chindian community in Malaysia and Singapore predominantly, but obviously I was open to stories from anywhere around the world, you know. And I did get, you know, really interesting sort of stories coming in from even communities in India, in the diaspora as well, you know, in Australia, in Canada and things like that, you know. So ever since then, you know, I suppose the project has become a bit of a holding space for the community to talk about issues that pertain to them, you know. Yeah, and I'm pleased of where it's gone, you know, but it's become a bit of a sort of, I guess, an obsessive project because I just kind of look out for things, you know, Chindian related. But, you know, I think it's at that intersection that I think, you know, really interesting starts to emerge from that.
How did you go about collecting these stories?
Yeah, so really, it was really from a call out that I did from the page, Chindian Diaries page. And people just started talking about it and you know, and it was featured on like the Star, NSD and all those things as well, and that also sort of broadened the reach as well for the communities. It is a difficult one, especially if you're doing it via online and you know, and then sometimes I would, you know, when I'm back for holidays and things like that, I would sort of meet up with these families and write down those stories myself, you know. So it was somewhat like an oral history project, but at the same time, you know, I'm also aware that because I'm writing it, I'm also curating it in many ways. I'm actually putting things that are interesting to me, you know, that I'm putting it out there, but obviously, you know, it's really a snapshot of someone's life, really, that I really wanted to showcase.
For those people who have not looked into the Chindian Diaries themselves, can you explain a little bit what they will find there?
Sure. I suppose the project sort of explores issues around self-identity, mainly belonging, family, and cross-cultural issues. In relation to those two communities in particular. But over the past couple of years as well, I've also been really interested in sort of the diaspora stories of the Chinese and Indian communities, because I think it's a diaspora. The Chindian community itself is a diaspora community, you know. And in trying to learn how those two communities navigate in a new country, you know, I think it's really an interesting thing for anyone to learn, you know. So when I did my research, I realized that there's a huge, not so much huge, but I guess a prominent, you know, community, for instance, in Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, Guam, Samoa, you know, Fiji. So it's not just a unique sort of characteristics of Malaysia where we have Chindians. You know, we also have all those communities around the world where the sort of a lot of them were brought in as indentured laborers. So you know, you have all of these communities coming up, and a new culture emerges from that.
I'm curious, do they also use the term Chindian to refer to themselves?
Not that I know of. I think it's a completely made-up term from Malaysia. I remember hearing it in the 70s, and my mom was the one that first used it, and I was like, what the hell is that? You know, but obviously, it kind of obviously makes sense, you know, because it's so obvious Chinese Indian, you know. And it's a very used term as well in Singapore. But it's so interesting how that lexicon has sort of gone into the consciousness of the Malaysian community and society here. And now it's just become a norm. And it's almost as you're a Chindian, you know exactly what that person's talking about, you know. So, and I suppose for me, it's and I've also been asked before as well about the parallels between Chindian community and the Peranakan community. And it's a difficult one because I think with the Peranakan community sort of came really early on in the 16th, right. 17th centuries, you know. But the difference with the Chindian community is that they came a lot later in the early 1900s, you know. So I think that's why there's as a community, I think we are still kind of learning and still emerging.
And there's
from that.
Also a difference, and it's an interesting parallel that the Peranakan culture, as it were, is a lot more defined in certain ways, whereas what it is that we exactly mean when you say Chindian culture, mm-hmm. I don't think is quite clear.
No, it's not. Part of my take on it is that, you know, with the Peranakans, I would say a lot of the marriages were also arranged, you know. So whereas I think with Chindian marriages, a lot of them were love marriages, you know. So and in many ways, a lot of times their union was frowned upon by both sides or even one side, you know. Whereas in the Peranakan culture, it was very much embraced. You mm-hmm. know, it is what we do and it is a very common, normal thing. You know, it's very normalized back then. So I think as a community, you know, that has also kind of created this sort of, I suppose, a community that was struggling to assert its own identity in many ways, you know. So I think it's an interesting one, and I'm still learning about it, to be honest. So I as much as I can understand and learn from it, I share it with my community, I suppose, you know, on that page, yeah.
So we need to take a break now, but I do know that the Chindian Diaries has actually spun off into so many different ways that they can now be presented, and I'd love to hear more about this after we come back.
Sure.
I'm speaking to curator and social change advocate Kevin Bathman. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
...to keep me company, and Mom laughed it off when I told her about it. Although I had a small handful of friends in school, I was always given the impression that I wasn't welcomed. In a sea of Chinese faces, I was the only dark, tanned-looking girl. It was like a black dot on a white cloth. My mom, Palaniyama Muthan, is Indian, and my dad, Ho Weng Fu, is Chinese. I recall an incident...
My parents' love story started with the love of durians, the king of fruit. In 1984, during a hot and sticky durian season, my Chinese dad, Tan Kim Siong, met my Indian mum, Madhavi Malyathan, in a durian plantation in Malimau, Malacca. What was originally a durian plantation visit and feast among friends turned out to be the day my parents first met and fell in love with each other.
Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to Kevin Bathman, who is a curator, storyteller, social entrepreneur, and the founder of the Chindian Diaries. The excerpt you just heard is one of many stories collected in this project. So, Kevin, you were saying earlier about how the Chindian Diaries is something that you continue to be interested in and fascinated by, and you keep finding new facets to this project. And some of the things that you've done with them, especially in Australia, where you've been based till now, is to have an exhibition. And you've also done theatre around this concept.
I suppose, you know, when I was first starting out this project, I was really quite hesitant in sharing really intimate details of my family, you know. But I was looking at some of the photos and some of the stories that I've heard from my own, you know, relatives and intimate family. And I suppose, you know, it sort of left a lot of sentiments and emotion that I really wanted to share with people, you know. And so in 2014, I received a grant to do this launch of a project. And what was interesting was that, you know, obviously we have a very, very small, you know, Chindian community in Australia. But what was interesting was that, you know, because it was curated as part of a larger South Asian arts festival called Paramasala, we had a lot of people from India particularly, and some from China as well, who saw that exhibition and who were just completely enthralled. And they were like, we have not even heard of this. Like, how did this happen?
So it's an exhibition of photos?
Photos, sorry. Yeah. Yes, it is an exhibition of about 300 photos that I collected via online. Mm-hmm. And then I actually printed them out, you know, and I just pasted it on a wall and I highlighted four stories, basically, of the communities here. So it was a bit of a showcase of those real stories, but also photographs that I've had also collected. And people were, I would say, were just quite intrigued by it, you know. Much like why I decided to collect those photos, because I think it forms a basis of what the community was and is, you know. And so from then on, you know, I've obviously, you know, have thought about, you know, wanting to do something like that in Malaysia as well. And you know, the plans are still on the cards, but, you know, obviously I had funding back then, you know. And ever since then, I was approached by a theatre company over there that does South Asian works as well. And I basically said that I wanted to do a verbatim theatre piece based on the interviews that I've done with those couples. Verbatim is basically a theatre method where the words that are being spoken by the actors are actual conversations that that was recorded. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did this. I interviewed six couples and I trimmed it down to three couples in the end for my reading that I had just early this year. And it was a really fascinating experiment in many ways because, you know, I had a very predominantly South Asian audiences. And the three couples were really sort of sharing really interesting, funny anecdotes about their lives, how they met, to what it was like being a migrant in a predominantly Anglo-Saxon country, you know. So I think those themes were really, resonated with anyone, really, you know, regardless of whether you're a migrant or not. But it just sort of showcased, you know, not just the complexities of the migrant experience, but then you go down to those levels of having those intersections between different cultures, different religions, you know. And I think that's what makes the project interesting, you know, because it's really looking into those various areas and not we're not just talking about race, but we're talking about so many other issues, you know, within it as well, you know, right down to culture, to skin color as well. You know, that's also another big issue that always comes up in the project. And as I said, I've probably collected about 50 to 60 stories, and the hope one day is to sort of put it into some sort of into a book format for people to read it, you know, and to really also showcase those photographs because I think they were so brilliant. I mean, and you know, you just kind of look at those photos and you go, wow, like what were they like, and you know, what was the era like back then, you know, and you can just imagine what they would have gone through back in those days, being this really interracial marriage when it was really frowned upon, you know, and I mean, and if you look at America, you know, I mean, they only had that civil rights move in the 60s, where, you know, where the mixed interracial marriages was allowed by law, you know. So for that to be happening in Malaysia from the 1930s onwards to the 40s and 50s and 60s was quite incredible in many ways. And I guess I wanted to sort of showcase that, you know, which I said, never had really had much of a presence, I suppose, or you know, no one was interested enough to sort of document those stories, you know.
Do you find yourself looking at your project and the stories in a new light now, in this new environment now in Malaysia, Malaysia Baru?
Yes and no, in many ways. I think in many ways, people still continued with their culture, regardless whether it was old or new government,
right.
You know. But I guess for now, I mean, I've always been interested in the fact that we need to be less rigid. Well, firstly, I don't think we even need that race or religion on official forms. That's my stand on it. But at the same time, I mean, if we do have that, then I think we should be allowed to even take two or three boxes if you want to. And seeing that how multicultural we are in this world these days, you know, I still quite can't comprehend why we're still a very paternalistic sort of society where, you know, you have to follow your father's race, correct?
Race, yes.
And in many ways, I mean, I kind of look more Chinese, you know, but I on my forms, I'm Indian because I have to follow my dad, right? So, I wish that, you know, people who have those different backgrounds are able to sort of take as many books as they want, you know. But I suppose, you know, I mean, if they give us two, I'll be happy. You know what I mean? Because in Singapore, they already did it. In 2010.
Yes. They allow hyphenated race
That's
categories
right.
now.
That's right.
I find that quite an interesting observation because in many ways, we are told that what we should aspire for is to be post-racial. To move beyond race categories. And yet a project like the Chinian Diaries very much does focus on race, but race as culture, perhaps.
Correct.
How do we kind of balance that between a celebration and an appreciation, but still not wanting to be defined by those?
Sure. I mean, I think in a lot of the stories that come up, a lot of it was really about sort of them wanting to share their experiences as either growing up biracial talking about how they, for instance, if it's an Indian mother marrying a Chinese man, you know, how they navigated that issue of not just identity, but being in an interracial relationship, you know. But I think, you know, in many ways, I mean, nationalism or nationalistic sort of like feelings around their country has never really come into play. You know, they've in all the stories that are, and all the people that have interviewed as well, it's almost in many ways quite separate the way they look at it. You know, I mean, so for example, you know, if it's a Malaysian couple, I mean, you know, they're very much proudly Malaysian, but at the same time, they still have this this interracial sort of you know relationship and culture that they still hold on to. You know, so kind of, I mean, similar but different in many ways.
And having been in Australia for the last 14 years and sort of looking at this culture almost both from inside and from outside, what did that add to the project?
It certainly added or rather raised a lot of questions because when I first did it, I mean, literally no one knew what it was. I mean, people were struggling with the word Chindian itself. Like, how do you pronounce the term? I would say it's just as you see it, you know, Chindian, you know. And many people, I mean, that I spoke to were really intrigued by the fact that a community like this exists in Malaysia and Singapore, right? Or even around the world, you know. And I suppose that led to a lot of, I guess, a deeper understanding about how diverse as a society we are in Malaysia. And I think it genuinely opened up new sort of a new way of defining, you know, these two cultures almost, you know. So, you know, I had sort of community members in Australia who were from, you know, an Indian background, a Chinese background, and said, who were just completely spellbound by those stories and those photos because they have never seen it before in their lives, you know. Mm. So to see, you know, over 300 photos was a bit of a real eye opener for them, you know. Mm. And in many ways, I mean, in even talking to people from an Anglo background in Australia, I mean, they themselves were also quite fascinated with the fact that, you know, that a community like this exists, you know. So I think, you know, it was it was a project that sort of trying to sort of bring forth, I suppose, a new understanding about race and identity, you know, which I think many people may, in a Western society anyway, I guess kind of struggle with at the same time, you know, because I think mixed race identities are fairly complex in many ways. And I think the conversation is anyway around race is, it's a difficult one to have in Australia, you know. Mm. So I think by them seeing that, it gives them an understanding that, you know, it is a fairly complex issue, you know, and I think we need to look at those nuances, you know, without really just categorizing people according to racial tick boxes, you know, which we are used to here. But, you know, I think elsewhere, I think we also need to sort of expand those boundaries and those definitions, you know.
Mm. You've recently experienced some big changes. You've received the Chevening Scholarship, so you'll be off to the UK for a year. And then you'll be doing a lot more work in Malaysia, I understand. So what will your scholarship involve? And then what do you plan to do after?
Well, I'm very thankful that I got the scholarship from for Chevening, and I'm doing a one-year master's full-time program in cultural studies in Goldsmiths University. You know, culture can encompass quite a broad range, you know.
Yep.
But that's one of the reasons why I chose that, because it sort of allowed me to sort of explore many ways of actually exploring culture as we speak it, you know, looking at media, looking at politics, social justice issues at the same time. And yes, I will be coming back after that in terms of, you know, what I'll be doing. It's still really sort of it's really up in the air, to be honest. I'm not quite sure what I want to do just yet. But I'm interested in sort of, you know, having this really difficult conversation, catalyzing conversations, and bringing a lot of the stuff that I hopefully, you know, I'm able to learn from my studies and sort of implementing it here in Malaysia. It's been something that I've been sort of been yearning to sort of explore, because I've also been in Australia for quite a while, 14 years, you know, and this change was something I kind of also really wanted to do, you know. But, you know, having said all that, I mean, even though I've been away for so long, you know, I've also been very much involved with what's happening in Malaysia, the socio-economic stuff that's happening here, political changes. I've also been involved in the Global Bursa team. I felt that I've never left at the same time, you know. But I think it has really broadened my sense of, I guess, life experience in many ways, yeah. Being a migrant, but, you know, and also being of mixed race engaging with the Malaysian society on many levels. And I think that's quite exciting, you know.
Do you see a lot of potential in Malaysia for the kind of work that you've been doing thus far, that intersection between social justice and arts and culture?
I've seen glimpses of it here, I think, you know, and I think, you know, there are various initiatives that, you know, that are already sort of happening, you know. I mean, Arts for Grabs is one of them, you know. The ideas, you know, reimagining Malaysia, you know, all those really, really, really interesting initiatives that are really sort of grassroots driven, you know. And I really would like to and support them, you know, in what they're doing. In terms of, I guess, looking at some of the niche areas that I'm interested in, so it's still a bit of a question mark, to be honest with you. So I'd like to sort of collaborate and actually talk to people about how I can support them with what I know and what I've learned, you know, and in sort of able to grow that conversation, you know, and to have a much wider conversation around culture, social justice issues, human rights, the arts as well.
And will we be seeing you expand the Chinian Diaries more while you are here?
I would like to. I mean, I think that's always been on the cards, to be honest. And I've also had a lot of, like, you know, my people that have inboxed me on Facebook and stuff, like, oh, when are you doing this in Penang? And, you know, so it's been something I've been really have been sort of like so acutely aware because it's a project that really needs to be seen here, particularly, right? Because
yes.
the community is all here, you know. I mean, it's a mixture of things, you know. It comes down to who's funding it, you know. I need to be here consistently for a while, you know. So, but it's a project that I would definitely would be taking on when I do come back, you know, and looking at how can we. Yeah, do a bit of a showcase here at the same time, you know. And meantime, I guess, you know, I'll keep collating stories, I'll keep collating photographs and writing those stories, you know, to really get that word out, you know, to people obviously online, but to everywhere else as well, people who are interested in those stories, you know.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Kevin.
Thank you so much, Shamila.
And all the best on your next step on your chefing journey and whatever comes beyond.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking to Kevin Buthman, who is a curator, storyteller, social change advocate, and the founder of The Chindian Diaries. You can explore his project at facebook.com/The Chindian Diaries. We'll be leaving you with another excerpt from the project. And if you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Mum and Dad had a difficult time convincing both their parents about their relationship. Dad's side of the family finally relented after hours of talk. On the maternal side, Mum tried many times to convince my grandfather, but failed. She even tried to get help from her relatives to talk to him, but to no avail. Seeing how upset Mum had become, my grandfather had arranged for Mum to be married to a local teacher. Being a strong-willed woman, Mum refused. It was only after my maternal great-grandfather Nambier had intervened and advised my grandfather to accept my dad that he began to soften his stance.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.